So we're holding up steady bays, Ahmed bays, 11 lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of a whole bunch of things where Rava asks Rava Bar Mori, who was an expert in Psukim and in Agantas, where's there a source in Torah for this or that expression? Sometimes it was something that the Chachamim say, sometimes it's a popular expression, sometimes both, and each time Rava Bar Mori is giving him a pasuk, sometimes Rava is replying, I have a better pasuk, and we've been going through like that one after another.
I remember in Talmud they were saying Alexander was asking questions.
That's something else. That's Alexander. This is Rava and asking Rava Bar Mori.
It's like that type of stuff.
So not really. That's something else that he's asking Dibrei Chochma or whatever. But yeah. Okay. Anyway. So Amalei Rava la Rava Bar Mori, Menohani Noham Milsi de Ami Inshi, where's a source in Torah for this that people say, Koris Chavrach V'loi Oni, if you call to your friend and he doesn't answer you, Romi Guda Rabba, then take a big wall, shoddy bay, and throw it at him. In other words, you're already, Rashi says, you're giving him Musa over and over, and he's not listening to you, then let him already just, Hanichai V'yipol Berisha, Rashi says, leave him alone, let him die in his rishos. We had a similar thing earlier in the Masechta, for example, we had an expression that Taliteru L'Rosha V'yamus, that if a person is going to be a Rosha and is going to be stealing, you're not necessarily obligated beyond a certain point to prevent him from doing that. So in that case, there's Avos Yisrael, but in this case, you're seeing, you're trying over and over again, and it's not doing any good, so then leave him alone and even let a wall fall on him. Wait. So where's a source in the Torah for this concept? Omalei. So Rabbi Mamori answers him, you have a pasuk where Hashem says through the Navi, Yan Tiartich V'loi Tahort, because I've tried to make you Tahor, and you wouldn't become Tahor, you're not listening to the Naviim, Mitumasech Loi Sitari Oid, therefore you won't become Tahor from your Tumah anymore. In other words, Hashem is saying, Kavyachol, so to speak, I'm giving up on you, which is the same thing as expressed in this thing. In fact, Marashah says, the pasuk continues, Ad Hanichias Hamasi Bach, which means literally until I let my anger rest on you. So that fits with the expression over here that was saying that throw down the wall, let the wall collapse on you.
Is this your people through Hashem's name?
Yeah, because they're doing Avedis. Yeah. So there's a lot of different explanations. Among others, there are the explanations, again, like Rashi is saying, that it means we're talking about you gave him Musa and he's not listening. So then after a while, eventually you give up on him. There is actually some discussion about that, because on the other hand, you have the concept, and we have the Gemara in Erchin tells us that you chayev to keep on giving him Musa until he hits you or until he curses you. So how does that fit over here? So among the answers is there's a difference whether the guy knows that he's doing wrong, then fine, by all means, keep on giving him Musa, eventually maybe it'll penetrate. Versus where he's claiming that I'm not even doing wrong, then after a while you give up.
Why?
Because eventually he's not listening anyway. He's not listening to what he claims that he's doing right, even though you've told him over and over that no, it's wrong. And after a while, you give up on it. With that said, there was a whole different explanation. The Rosh gives a different explanation. Al pi halacha, that it also means if you called him in the sense you summoned him to Beis Din for a case where he owes you money or whatever and he refuses to come, after a while you can push the wall on him, meaning you're allowed to get permission from the Beis Din to go to the Goyish courts and take him to court over there. Normally it's a very serious issue we have in this coming parasha in Parashas Mishpatim, Ve'elam Mishpatim, Shatosim Lefneihem, V'loi Lefnei Dayoni Omasa Olam, as Rashi says, for the person brings to Dayoni Omasa Olam, he's degrading the Torah and claiming as though their laws are better than ours, etc. But nevertheless, the Rosh explains, based on this Gemara, that yes, if you've tried over and over again and the guy's not listening and he's not coming to Beis Din, then you do have the right to go to a secular court. Secular court will have already enforcement mechanisms. Mm-hmm. Okay, next. Yeah. Where do we have a source in Torah for the expression that people say, Beira de Shosis Mine, a well from which you drank water, don't throw a clod of dirt into it. So in other words, the expression is, in other words, that if you've gotten use out of something from before, then don't be mavaze it in the future. Where is a source in Torah for that? Amalei, so Rabbi Mamori answers in Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, don't don't reject completely the Adoimi, because after all, he's a brother. He's descended from Esav, the brother of Yaakov. And don't reject completely the Mitzri, because you were a stranger in his land, meaning because they gave you hospitality in the first place. So that's the beir of the Shosis Minei. You had benefit from them, so therefore don't completely reject them.
What's an Adoimi is like what?
An Adoimi means a person from Edom.
Oh,
Edom. An Edom. And a Mitzri means a person from Mitzrayim. Okay. The point is, I'm saying, since you were a guest in Mitzrayim's land, therefore that's a well that you're drunk from, and therefore in the future you shouldn't like throw a clod of dirt into it, like say, like, who needs you? In other words, the point is, don't reject them completely, and as the Pasuk goes on to say, the grandson of a Mitzri or Mitzri's Ger is allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people. So we have many examples of that. We know, for example, that Moshe didn't do the first three makas. He left them to Aaron because he had benefited from the Nile and from the dirt. The Shittim Kovetzis over here brings an interesting story involving the Rif, which was told over by the Rif's Talmud and his successor, the Rif Migash. One time, the story is the Rif wasn't feeling well, and there was a Yid in town who gave him his house to stay in, and the guy also had a bathhouse, and the Rif was able to use that bathhouse as part of the program he needed for his recovery. Years later, this guy, the same Yid, was in terrible financial difficulties, and he's going to have to sell this bathhouse. So that means, in other words, it's going to have to be undone under the supervision of Beis Din. He's going to have to sell all the things, and then the money is going to be taken to pay off all the people he owes money to. The Rif said, even though he was on the Beis Din in the town, he said, I'm recusing myself. I'm not going to sit on this Beis Din. Since I had benefit from this bathhouse, I'm not going to sit on a case involving a Din Torah, which involves taking apart this bathhouse and selling the things from it, because that would be an example of what we're saying over here in the Gemara. So this is an example of this concept. Now, of course, the Nile and the dirt and the bathhouse and whatever are all inanimate things. Right. They don't feel anything. Right. Nevertheless, the point is, first of all, we have at the end of this past week's parasha, we have Rashi pointing out, don't treat the stones of the Mizbeah disrespectfully, and from that learn a kavachoyma to not treat a fellow Yid disrespectfully. Right. But besides that also, there's the idea that this way a person develops more of a sensitivity towards the concept of Hakaras HaToiv. When a person acts in this way, where he's going to show Hakaras HaToiv even to inanimate objects, and it helps strengthen by him the Hakaras HaToiv towards the Eibishter and towards fellow people. So therefore, that's why it's important to act in this way.
Well, then you could say that part that Moshe was in, you shouldn't put the marker in.
That's the point, in other words. So we see this as an example of Hakaras HaToiv to an inanimate thing. Okay. Another one. Where do we get in Torah the expression that people say? One person says to the other, for example, a person is going to be going into a business deal or something and saying that, but there's a lot of risk involved. So he tells the other person, E dolis dura, if you're willing to lift the burden with me, dolina, then I'll lift it up. But loy dolina, and if not, then I don't want to lift it up. In other words, I don't want to go into this risky business by myself. Where's an example in Torah of such a thing? Amalei, so Rabbi Bamori answers him, as you have in the Pasuk, by Yomer Aleha, and we have when they're going to war against Sisera in Haftorah, Parshas Beshalach, by Yomer Aleha Barak. So Devorah tells Baruch, you have to get together 10,000 Jewish soldiers. Baruch tells her, if you go with me, then I'll go. And if you don't go with me, I won't go. So we see there's an example in Torah, in Jewish history, of somebody saying that, I'm not willing to take all the risks by myself. Okay. Another one, where's a source in Torah for the expression that people say, when we were young, legavi, and then we were considered important, like fully grown people. But now that we're older, then people treat us like children. So in other words, sometimes you have, as people get older, then sometimes people don't treat them with as much respect as before. Where do you have a story? Well, sometimes older people have greater respect. Sometimes you have greater respect for them, but not always. Yeah, fine. But sometimes the fact is you do sometimes find that people do that, but people treat older people less respectfully. So where's a source in Torah where we see an example of that? There is actually an explanation that says that what it means is that it means the person himself. Sometimes when a person is young, he thinks he knows it all. Then when he gets older, he realizes how much he doesn't know, how much of a child he is compared to how much he should really know. Anyway, where's an example in Torah of such a concept? Amalei, so Rabbi Bamori tells him, consider, me'ikra ksiv, when the Jewish people are first leaving Mitzrayim, it says, Hashem holach lefnam yoimam, Hashem himself is going before them, ba'amud onan, with a pillar of cloud, lanchoisam aderach, to lead them on the way, v'layla ba'amud esh, and by night, with a pillar of fire, lahor lahem, to give them light. So we see that Hashem himself, kavyochol, is leading them. Ulvasoit ksiv, afterwards you have, after the Chet HaEgel, the Hashem says, or Hashem tells it to Moshe even before the Chet HaEgel, it's in this coming week's parasha, that Hashem tells Moshe in advance, Hinei Anochi Shaleach Malach Lefanecha L'Shmor Chabadarech, behold, I'm going to be sending a Malach in front of you to guard you on the way. So in other words, like now, so to speak, the Jewish people are older and more mature, therefore Hashem himself doesn't have to lead them, now he can leave it up to the Malach. Now, in the event Moshe refused that, actually, we find in Parshas Kisisa, after the Chet HaEgel, Moshe says, absolutely not. And Hashem finally continued going with them himself. But the point is, in other words, that Hashem is saying that, so Marashah brings in this connection from the Mechilta that says that you have, to begin with, you have a king is taking his children on a dark path, and he himself holds the light for them. And then afterwards, though, Hashem is only saying that I'm only going to send through Gdolei Malchus, I'm going to send a Malach to do it. So that illustrates this idea. In other words, that as a person gets older, sometimes they're not treated as respectfully as before. Okay. Next, Amalei Rava L'Rava Bamori, Menoha Milse D'Amri Inshi, where's a source in Torah for the expression that people say, Bosa Mori Nichsi Tzivi Meshach, at Moshach, whatever. After the master, after the one who owns the property, Sivi gets pulled after him. Sivi, Marshall explains, is a word that means fat. So in other words, the expression means that fat tends to follow the rich, tends to follow the rich person. But there is actually an accident. So it means it's like the expression, in other words, a rich person, like riches are more attracted to him. So in other words, the point is, you have Marashah compares it with a Gemara elsewhere that says, Krav legabe it gehino ve'idhan. If you come close to the person who has been perfumed with fragrant oil, then you yourself, a little bit of that oil will rub off on you. So it's an expression. So it means, in other words, if you hang around a rich person, then some of his wealth is going to rub off on you. Yeah. The Bach gives a different explanation that the word sivi can also mean, not the Hagoris HaBach, but the Fidush HaBach says that, that's something, two different things. Hagoris HaBach and Fidush HaBach. Anyway, Chidush HaBach and his Chidushim points out the word, somehow Shaw explained it here, in other words, that the word sivi we find elsewhere in the Gemara where the word siv means fat. However, the Bach and his Chidushim points out the word sivi can also mean, in many places in the Gemara, it means wood. So it means when you have a rich person, do anything for him, even if it means only carrying wood for him, and eventually, again, by hanging around him, you're gonna get something of his wealth. So where's the source in Torah for that concept? So he answers, Amalei Dichtiv, because we find by Loit, Gamla Loit Ha'Holach as Avram, also Loit, who was going with Avram, also he, Hayat Son of Vok of Olam, he had cattle, and he had sheep and cattle, and tents, meaning why is the Pasuk mentioning that he's going with Avraham? The point is, in the S'chus, that he was going with Avraham, is why some of Avraham's wealth rubbed off on him, and he became wealthy as well. So there we have a source in Torah for this concept that if you hang around the rich person, then some of it ends up with you as well. Okay. Now that we have though, so those are all the various things that Rava was asking Rava Bar Mori. Now, getting back to at the beginning of the Sugya in the Mishnah, we talked about that the story with when Avimelech kidnapped Sarah and then he was forced to return her and to ask Avraham Mechila, which the Mishnah had said, therefore you learn from that you always have to ask Mechila. It's not enough to just pay back what you owe. And then we talked about in that connection that Avraham davened for Avimelech and Hashem answered Avraham and Sarah even before he answered Avimelech and company and then healed them. So now we have the flip side of that kind of. Before we were saying that when a person davens on behalf of somebody else, then he gets answered first. The flip side of it is now we're going to talk about if a person calls down judgment from Hashem on somebody else, then he gets it first. So Amar Rav Chanan, Amoser Dina Chaveray Hu Nenash Tchila. If a person gives over his judgment on another person to Hashem, in other words, he says, Hashem, look what this guy did to me. Please punish him. Then he himself, the one who calls out to Hashem, gets the punishment first. Rashi doesn't explain over here, but Rashi elsewhere explains that basically Hashem says, Hashem and the Beis Din Shammai will say, look, let's consider, do you really deserve that the other person should be punished on your behalf? Let's check through what you yourself are doing. And you may find, of course, that it's not quite as kosher v'yosher as it should be. So therefore, it's in Rosh Hashanah as well. Yeah. Chenema, as we find also in connection with Abraham and Sarah. Right? After, so what happens? Sarah is infertile, so she tells Abraham, marry Hagar and you'll still have children, and etc. And then Hagar starts acting very, very chutzpahdik towards Sarah. And Vatoma Sarai al Avram chamasi alacha, Sarai says to Abraham, my wrong is on you, meaning she's complaining to Avram two things. She's saying, first of all, that why did you only daven for yourself? You told Hashem, I don't have children. Why don't you say, we don't have children? So now Hashem gave you a child with Hagar, because she's pregnant now. Meanwhile, I'm still infertile. Why don't you daven for both of us?
Shmuel
wasn't born yet at this time. She's pregnant yet, and she's pregnant at this time. Hagar. This is
right.
Sarah had taken Hagar and married her off to Avraham.
Right.
Now, when Hagar was pregnant, then she started acting in a chutzpahdik way towards Sarah. Because, as Rashi explains on the pasuk over there, she's saying, Sarah must not be much of a tzaddikus. After all these years, she's married to Avraham, and she doesn't have any children. Meanwhile, I marry Avraham and I turn up pregnant right away. So she started acting in a chutzpahdik way to Sarah. So now, Sarah says to Avraham, I have two complaints against you. First of all, why didn't you daven for me as well? Why did you only say to Hashem, v'anoichi ho'ilich hariri? And second of all, why are you allowing Hagar to act in such a chutzpahdik way towards me? And she says, she finishes off in the pasuk, Yishpat Hashem beini uveinecha, Hashem should judge between me and you. This is an example of Moshe Din HaChaverim. She's saying Hashem should see what's wrong over here, and Hashem should take up my cause and then deal with it. And what happened later on, as Sarah passed away first, Avraham came to mourn for Sarah and to cry for her, meaning, in other words, had it not been for that, then Sarah would have lived longer. The fact that she passed away years before Avraham is because of this, because she had been Moser Din on Avraham to Hashem. Now, so first of all, Marsha points that now, so actually, Bahani Mili, the Gemara says, however, this only applies to Isra Dina Ba'ara, only if he has a base din to which he can have recourse here on earth. So when a person, in other words, that person has a complaint against somebody else, and he could take it to base din, and instead of going to base din, he says, I'm leaving it up to Hashem. Hashem, you punish this guy. Then we're saying over here that Hunanishkila. But if there's no recourse, there's no base din to go to here on earth, who can deal with it, then he's entitled to go to Hashem first. Now, in this case, Tosfos points out that you had the Beis Din of Shame was in existence. So she should have gone to the Beis Din. If she has a complaint against Avraham, she should have gone to the Beis Din of Shame. The Ran makes a different point. The Ran says, in addition, fine, even if you're going to say this is not something that goes to a Beis Din necessarily, at least she should have first told Avraham what's wrong, what she has an objection to, before she starts saying, Yishpat Hashem Beinu Beinecha. First she should tell him, you know, something's going wrong over here. And then, if Avraham doesn't do anything about it, then she can say, Yishpat Hashem Beinu Beinecha. So because she didn't do that, is why we're saying that she was punished and she passed away first. Now, why, Marsha points out, why do we need Davka, this pasuk, Vayavar Avraham Lisbeth, the Sarah of Livkosa? We have other pasukim that show that Avraham lived long after Sarah. The point is, in other words, the Gemara is understanding Sarah would have, by rights, lived as long as Avraham. She was, in fact, 10 years younger than him, so she maybe even should have outlived him, except for this. When it says, in other words, Vayavai Avraham, because in other words, in a sense, so what we're saying is, the Tzoyek, the one who calls out to Hashem, gets punished first. Nevertheless, the Nitzak also does get a punishment. In this case, it was a punishment for Avraham as well, because the fact that Sarah, his Ashes Ne'urim, passed away is a terrible blow to him. But it was more first for her that she passed away, and then by Yovei Avraham, because Avraham only found about it afterwards, and then, in other words, we see that both of them ended up suffering from it, Sarah first, and only then Avraham found out. Because she was the one who was Moshe Din, that's what we're saying. Because she was the one who, instead of going to a Beis Din, instead of going to Avraham himself first, instead she was Moshe Din.
She didn't.
She said to Avraham, she right away said to Avraham, I have a complaint, Yishpat Hashem Bein Yevenecha. She should have first gone to Avraham with the complaint without the Yishpat Hashem. So Hagar is another matter, that's it. So if there's no Beis Din that's available, or if the Beis Din isn't going to do anything about it, then yes, a person is able to be Moshe Din Mashamayim. The Ponim Yofis, actually, the Baal HaFla, brings a fascinating explanation on why the Gemara brings Dafka this pasuk.
Yeah.
He says like this, he was an Achron, yeah, he was the Rav of Frankfurt 200 odd years ago. He was a Talmud of the Mizrach HaMagen and a Chaver of the Alter Rebbe. Anyway, he says like this, B'chlal, the Gemara elsewhere talks about why a woman doesn't have a mitzvah, Pru Avu, but nevertheless, a Pru Avu is a mitzvah to have children.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. A woman does not have that mitzvah, technically. Only the man does. However, nevertheless, the Gemara describes that a woman wants to have children because she wants that there should be somebody to take care of her in older age and to bury her. Well, now, if the husband is not available, then at least she'll have children who will outlive her. Well, so what happens? So she's complaining against Avraham, and the result is, in the end, who was the one who ended up burying her was Avraham. So that's why the Gemara brings that to this pasuk to stress that that's what happened over here. She was complaining, I don't have children, but because she complained in an inappropriate way, therefore it wasn't her children who were involved with burying her, it was Avraham himself. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yitzchak, woe to the person who cries out to Hashem more than the one who's being cried about. In other words, like we just said, a person is moser din l'chaveroi, where he shouldn't, then he's in bigger trouble than the one he's crying out to Hashem about. Tanya nami hochiv, you learn similarly in the Braisa, echad atzoyek ve'echad anitzak b'mashma. When the Pasuk says, in this coming week's parasha, when it says that, how does the Pasuk describe, it says, call amon of a yosem lois to anu, and don't harass, don't cause trouble to a yosem and amona, and if they do, then if they cry out, Hashem says, I'll listen to his cry, echad atzoyek ve'echad anitzak b'mashma. Where the Pasuk says, v'horagti eschem b'chorev, Hashem says, I'll get angry, and I'll kill you, plural, with the sword. So that implies both, the one who's crying out and the one who's being cried out about. But the one who cries out where they should instead go to Beis Din is the one who ends up suffering the consequences first. So in other words, that's exactly the same point. When they're Moser Din al Chaver, and they, instead of being Moser Din, they had the option instead to go to Beis Din and have Beis Din deal with it, and instead they chose to immediately cry out to Hashem, then the Pasuk is implying they're going to be in trouble as well. The Eschem refers to all of you, meaning both the Yosem V'Almana as well as the other person who actually harassed them, and the Tzoyek is going to have it worse, because we said that the Moser Din HaChaveroi, he gets it worse because then he gets judged more strictly in Shemayim. Again, if they have no recourse, if they have no Beis Din, or they went to Beis Din and Beis Din is not dealing with the situation, then they have the right to cry out to Hashem. Then we're not saying that. We're talking about where to begin with. Instead of going to Beis Din, they're just Tzoyek to Hashem, then we're saying they're in trouble. So Hashem doesn't judge a cotton necessarily on his own, but whatever. Okay, the point is, in other words,
Amr
Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak says another thing, we brought one thing from Rav Yitzchak, and so now the Gemara brings another thing from him, which also has to do with the story of Avimelech and Abraham and Sarah. La'olam al tikil lashedyet kala ba'enecha. The curse of a simple person should never be a light matter in your eye. In your eyes.
Right.
Sharei Avimelech killed a Sarah, because we see the example that Avimelech cursed Sarah, v'niskayim bizarra, and his curse came true on her children. After Avimelech is forced to return Sarah and to give all kinds of presents and everything, he says, I'm giving you an extra present. It should be for you a covering of eyes. Now, in the simple sense, what it means is, in other words, he's saying, Rashi explains on the Pasuk, this way it will make everybody realize what happened over here. Like this, if I didn't give you gifts, people are going to think, okay, he kidnapped her, he had his fun with her, and then he gave her back. Now that I have to give all these expensive gifts, everybody's going to realize that there was a nest over here. So it'll cover up their eyes, in other words, in the sense that nobody will think that you did anything wrong. However, the Gemara is also seeing in it a meaning. Susenai means a covering of eyes, meaning that there's a curse embedded in it. Omar Allah, he says to her, since you concealed the matter of me, you didn't tell me that Abraham is your husband, and because of that, the Goram to Eli Aksar is there, you caused me all this trouble. Because of that, Yehirot and Shiyolach Bonik Suyeinayim, therefore may it be Hashem's will that you should have children whose eyes are covered. And sure enough, in Iskayim Bezara, it came true with her child, just that Yitzchak went blind in his old age. So now there are a lot of different reasons for why that happened, but among Rashi brings three of them on the Pasuk, but here we have another reason it had to do, among other things, with Avimelech's Klala. Because Yishmael is not a son of Sarah, no. Only Yitzchak is a son of Sarah, right? So Moshe brings out actually over here the different stories over here, whether Avimelech was saying that you deserve to go blind yourself, but it didn't happen to her, it happened to her son, or whether to begin with, like we have it in front of us in the Gemara over here, that he's saying that that your children should be Ksuya Enayim, and sure enough, that's what happened. Hagoyis Habach brings a Girsa, Shehei Loch Ksiyos Enayim, that you should have a blinding of eyes, which means that he's saying that she herself should, and instead it came true in her children. Either way, the point is we see that Kirlof Hediot, even though he's such a simple person compared to Abraham and Sarah, nevertheless is Klala had him. And in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar Ababahu, Lo'olam Yehei Adam Min Hanu Dafin V'lo Yino Roidfin. A person should always prefer to be one of the ones who is pursued, who is chased after, not one of the pursuers. Meaning, as Moshe says, you could have a case where a person is being pursued and chased and harassed by other people, and he has the opportunity to turn the tables and become the roidif instead. Better he shouldn't do that. Obviously, when it's a case of pikuach nefesh, you have a mitzvah to save, or you have a mitzvah when there's a roidif, a person has a mitzvah, anybody has a mitzvah to help save the near death, but we're saying you yourself don't try to say, look, I have the opportunity to turn the tables on the guy, I'll be the roidif. Because we see among the birds, there's no one that's more pursued more than turtle doves and doves, because they're weak birds. And after those are the ones that can be brought as korbanos. So we see how Hashem always appreciates the nirdaf more than the roidaf. There's medrashim that bring more things in that connection. There's medrashim that bring in that connection different examples that we see in Jewish history and different times like that. We're even based on a posik in there, based on there's a posik in Kehelos actually that says v'halakim yivakash as nirdaf, and the medrash brings several examples of that. Where even you have, for example, even the roidaf is a tzaddik and the nirdaf is a rasha. Nevertheless, Hashem looks out for the nirdaf even ahead of the roidaf. And then it brings up several examples from that in Jewish history. So therefore, that's what the Gemara is saying over here.
And even if the
so we're saying if you have the halacha is right, you have to try to kill the roidef or wound him if necessary to save the person's life. We're not talking about that. We're talking about it's not a matter of pikuach nefesh, but you have a person who figures, you know what, I have the chance to turn the tables on a guy who's been harassing me. Let me do that. The Medrash is saying, the Gemara is saying, and the Medrash is saying, it's not such a great idea to do that because Halakim Yivakash is near death. Hashem is always looking out for the near death more than the right.
Why should you be harassed? Should he not harassed?
Better that you shouldn't be at all. Better you avoid the situation altogether. But if it's a question between being a roidef or being a nirdef, we're saying better to be the nirdef. That's what we're saying. Obviously, if you can remove yourself from the situation and not have the problem at all, then that would be all the better.
Yeah. But if you're going to be a nirdef, it's going to cause you more pain.
But that's what we're saying. If you are, if it's a choice between being a nirdef and being a roidef, don't be the roidef. That's all it's saying. Yeah, finished. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had said, Ha'oimer Sameas Einichulo, the Mishnah had given examples as follows. If Reuven says to Shimon, blind my eye, or break my hand, or whatever, and then the other guy does it, he's chayev, and even if he said, I'm a nas lifter, even if he said, I'm conditioned that you'll be potter, he'll still be chayev. On the other hand, if he had said, kras susi, shabaras kadi, if he had said, rip my clothing, or break my jug, also the guy would be chayev, but if he says, I'm a nas lifter, if he says, I'm conditioned that you'll be potter, then the other guy is potter. That's what we have to figure out. That's what we're going to discuss now in the Gemara. What is the difference between the Reisha? What is the difference between the Reisha and the Sefer? Why is it in the Reisha when he says, so again, Reuven says, blind my eye, and Shimon, and he says, even Amanas lifter, nevertheless, Shimon is still chayev, whereas if he says, rip my clothing, and Amanas lifter, then Shimon will be potter. What is the difference between one and the other? Amalei, so he answers, Reisha lefisha einod a moichal al rosha evorim. The reason is in the reisha because a person would never actually forgive the injury to his main limbs. We can assume that he would never actually seriously mean you can blind my eye and you'll be potter. He obviously must mean he's saying it sarcastically, whether he's saying out of anger, whatever it is. Obviously, he doesn't seriously mean such a thing. Well, actually, the Lavush explains that what it means is that what it means is maybe he could figure to begin with, he could manage it, he could stand it, and in the end he can't, so therefore it's a mechila b'tos. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that the different Lavushim have an explanation exactly why, but the bottom line is that Rava is saying on the side of it here, it brings actually, it should be Rava, or Rav actually, anyway, but there are different Yosois, whether it's Rava or Rava or Rav, whatever, anyway, the point is, Because a person is not going to be moichel al rosh eivarim. Omale, so Rav Asi Bachama asked him, "V'chi odem moichel al tsaroi? Why can we assume that a person would be moichel on his tsar?" We should assume by the same token not. And yet, the Tanya we learn in a Braisa. Hakeni psaini, if Reuven says to Shimon, hit me or wound me, amanas lifter, on condition that you will be potter, then he is potter. Even though on the face of it, a person wouldn't be moichel on that kind of tsar either. The Mishnah is saying that he's chayav regardless, and the Braisa is saying not only when it comes to putting out his eye, or breaking his hand, or whatever, or cutting off his hand, something irrevocable like that. But even, for example, the Braisa is saying he says hakeni tsaini, hit me or wound me. Nevertheless, if the guy does it, he's chayav, even though no. So then the Braisa says that no, I'm an aslifter potter.
Right.
So therefore, why is it that where he says, blind my eye, the guy's going to be chayev no matter what. But if he says, hakeni tsaini, I'm an aslifter, he will be potter. Right. What's the difference? On the face of it, there should be no difference. Ishtik, so he was quiet. Rava.
Why is the
rest
saying that he's potter?
That's the question. He's asking, given that you're telling me, lefisha ein on a moichel al rosh eivarim, if that's the case, then we can assume a person is not moichel on the tsar, on the pain of an injury as well. And yet the braisa is saying that he's potter in the case of an injury, hakeni tsaini. Ishtik, so Rava was quiet and didn't have an answer. Now, Agoy Sabach actually has a different girsa, which takes out some of the words in the Gemara over here, and what it is that he didn't say anything about Rosh Eivarim. To begin with, he said, a person is not moichel on his tsar, and then Rav Asi Bachoma asks him, but we have a braisa that said that he is moichel on his tsar. So it's a more direct contradiction. Omar, and then he says, Midi Shmiya Loch Baha, have you, Rav Asi Bachama, heard anything about this to explain it, Taka? Omalei, so Rav Asi Bachama answers, Hochi, Omar Rav Sheshes, what Rav Sheshes said is like this. The reason why the difference between the case of our Mishnah that involves his hand or his eye or whatever, versus the Braisa, which is talking about Hakeni Tsaini, the difference is Mishum Pgam Mishpacha, because there's a defect to the Mishpacha involved. In other words, it's an embarrassment for the Mishpacha that in the future that they should have a Baal Mum among them. So therefore, Hakeni Tsaini is different. It's his own personal tsar. Yes, he could be moichel on his own personal tsar, even when it comes out to putting out his eye or whatever, but not Pgam Mishpacha. So therefore, he doesn't have the right to be moichel that. Therefore, he's going to have to pay after all. And that's what the Mishnah means, that he's still going to be chayev. And Tosfos points out the result is he's going to have to pay everything, including the tsar. Even though you could say the guy was moichel on the tsar, but once we have his chayev on the grounds of Pgam Mishpacha, then we would say that he's chayev completely. Okay, so the Gemara continues on that. Not everybody. He's not able to be moichel. The gam for his mishpacha.
But if he didn't have a family, would it be?
If he didn't have a family, maybe it would be different. But wait, itmar. But then we have a discussion of Amiroyim about that. Rab Oshia Amar Mishum Gam Mishpacha. Rab Oshia says yes, exactly what Rav Sheshes said because of Gam Mishpacha. Rava Amar. Rava gives a different reason. Mishum She'en on a Moichel Al Rosh Eivarim Shalei, because a person is not Moichel on his Rosh Eivarim. Now, if we had the main limbs of his body, like his eye or whatever. So as far as the Braisa, so now the answer would be before when Rav Asi Bachama asked Rava from the Braisa, then Rava was quiet. Now instead, Rava has an answer. Actually, the difference is there's a difference between Rosh Eivarim versus Tsar. Tsar, a person can be Moichel on. Rosh Eivarim, we don't assume that he would be Moichel on. If the Girsa before was Rava, or Rab, as various Rishonim have, then there's no question, obviously, Rabba or Rab was the one who didn't know the answer. Rabba is the one who knows the answer. That there's a difference between one and the other. So that's the second opinion. So that's what we're saying. If it was Rabba before, then it was means that before he didn't know the answer, and now he figured out the answer. If you're saying before it was Rab or Rabba, then it's two different Amiroyim, and then there's no yet. Rabbi Yochanan says a third answer. Yes, a person might be moichel on everything, but yesh hein shehu kalav v'yesh lav shehu kahein. There can be a yet when a person says the word yes, but it amounts to saying no, or vice versa. Meaning, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan explains like this. In the Mishnah, the Mishnah had used the expression, where, listen, The Mishnah had used the expression that Reuven says Sames eni kates yodi amanas lifter. Rabbi Yochanan understands if that was all one statement of his, then in fact the other guy is potter. But if he says blind my eye, and Shimon says, do you mean that I should be potter? And he says yes. So Rashi explains that yes can be in a sarcastic way. Yeah? Like, you think that you should be potter if you do something like that? And that amounts to saying no. And vice versa, you can have a lav, which is like a hain, the other way around. No, and which means a yes. So the answer, the reconciliation between the Mishnah and the Braisa would be as follows. When the Braisa had said, Hakeni Tsaini Amanas lifter, we're talking about that the person that Reuven himself is saying the whole thing. He's saying, you hit me and wound me, and the understanding is that you will be potter. There's no hain or lav involved there at all. Therefore, the other guy is in fact potter when he does it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan is explaining in the Mishnah, when we're saying he's chayev, we're talking about, he said, you hit me. And Shimon says, do you mean that I'll be potter? And he says, yeah. And you're meant to understand that sarcastic yeah is meant to be a no, and vice versa. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, and rather they say it's a little bit of a doichik. Fine, you could say Tosfos explains because it's more normal a person would be moichel on his mamon than on his guf. So therefore the Mishnah could be distinguishing between whether he said wound my body or whether he said rip my clothing. Really, you could say by the clothing we wouldn't necessarily say this hain kalav or lav kahain, because fine, by clothing a person is more willing to be moichel. However, Tosfos finds that to be a bit of a doichik. Rather, the vort is by Nizke Gufoy, even if he actually says yes, and even if he says it b'nei chose, he doesn't say yeah, he says yeah, nevertheless, we assume it to be ditmia. We assume at any time that he didn't say straight out, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you hit me, or you do whatever to me, I'll manas that you'll be potter. Any time there has to be a question and an answer involved, when it's with his guf, we're going to assume that it means bitmia. We're going to assume that it means that he's saying, no, you're not actually going to be potter. I'm only saying that sarcastically. By Niske Mamoina, and Niske Mamon, if he says no, then if he says it to Bnei Chusa, then just the other way around. We can assume that it means that he meant that you will actually be potter. Because why would he tell him to begin with, rip my clothing, unless he meant that you're going to be potter? And by Mamon, a person is, so therefore Tosfos, in other words, learns, not like Rashi that was saying, it depends whether he said yeah or yeah, or no, but rather Tosfos says, with Gufay, always the yes is going to mean no. And by Kalim, the no is always going to be yes, because after all, he volunteered, you go ahead and rip my Kalim, and therefore even if, when the guy says, does that mean I'll be potter? And he says no, nevertheless, it means yes, with his guf. Since a person is not moichel on things with his guf, then therefore, now the difference is, according to the other Amiroyim, what we're saying is, there's never a case where he can be moichel, where he says, put out my eye. According to Rabbi Sheshes and Rabbi Oshia, he's never going to be moichel on that because of Gam Mishpacha, which can't be moichel. According to Rava, a person is never going to be moichel on such a thing. Therefore, we can't assume that even when he said, go ahead and do it, then the other guy should be potter. According to Rabbi Yechanan, it will depend on what Lashon he used. If he actually said to begin with, you hit me, you put out my eye, you whatever, I'll manas that you'll be potter. So he, to begin with, volunteered the entire statement, then in fact, according to Rabbi Yechanan, the other guy will be potter.
Why
person would want to? It doesn't matter. The point is, it does happen. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in the Braisa. If a person says, Akeni Tsaini Amanas lifter, if he says, hit me and wound me on condition that you'll be potter, or he says, Akeni Tsaini, the other guy says, Amanas lifter, do you mean Amanas that I'm going to be potter? And the other guy says, Hain, Yesh Hare Yesh Hain, Shukalab, there you have an example of a hain which is like a lab. Again, according to Rashi, specifically when he said hain in a sarcastic tone, hain, sure, you know, like you'd say in English, yeah, right. Or like you'd say, hain, you think really so? According to Tosfos, it would mean even if he actually says a plain hain, it means loy because we're talking about his body. On the other hand, if he says kras susi, but if he says rip my clothing, and the other guy asks, I'm an ass lifter, do you mean on condition that I'll be potter? But omale lav, and he says no, harei lav, shukahain, that's a no, which is like a yes. Again, according to Rashi, we mean where he said a sarcastic or a questioning kind of no. According to Tosfos, even if he says a plain kind of no, then it would mean yes, because otherwise he wouldn't have mentioned him to begin with, rip my clothing.
Maybe he wants to just, like, make a joke.
And well, then he wouldn't tell him to begin with. Then yeah. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had continued, Shabbat Kadi Kras Tzusi Chayev, that if Reuven says, break my jug or rip my clothing, then he's Chayev, and he, because he didn't say that the other guy is Potter, but the Gemara says, Rumini, I have a contradiction. The Pasuk says that a person gives a Shomer Kalim to watch, and the expression is Lishmer, that means Veloila Abed, that not that when is the other guy Chayev in Pia, only when he gave it to him to watch, not when he gave it to him La'abed, where he gave it to him to begin with to destroy. And Lishmer below the Kroya, where he gave it to him to watch, not to rip it, or Lishmer below the Chalak Aniyim, only when he gave it to him to watch, not that he should distribute it to the Aniyim. In any of those cases, then if the guy does destroy it or rip it or give it away or whatever, he's not Chayev, and he's not Chayev even for Pia. As far as, by the way, in the case of the Aniyim, Rashi points out, the Aniyim themselves won't be able to sue him and say, we should collect that because it doesn't necessarily belong to them. He can say, I would have given it to other Aniyim. So therefore, they don't have an actual claim on it. The point being, in other words, from this Braisa, we see that what are we saying? In the Mishnah, we're saying that if Reuven tells Shimon, break my Kaili, then, and he doesn't say, I'm a Nas lifter, then he's Chayim. But in the Braisa, we're saying he gives him the Kaili, and tells him that I'm giving it to you in order to break, and the guy breaks it, and he's Potter. So, because we're saying, even if it was Pashaya, he's Potter. Tosfos actually points out, on the face of it, you have to ask, I mean, okay, the Pasuk is pottering him from Pia. If he was careless and the Kaili broke, then you're not Machayim. Who says he's allowed to break Kaili via Dayim? But nevertheless, Tosfos says, from the wording of the Braisa, you can see that it means that he told him, actually, you go and break it, or you go and rip it, or whatever. Anyway. So, how do you reconcile that with the mission? There's a difference whether it actually came to his hands yet or not. Did the other guy, did Reuven actually give him the Kaili yet? If it came to his hand and then he ripped it, so no, he didn't tell him, I'm an ass lifter, therefore he's Chayim. Where the Braisa is talking about it hadn't even he ripped it before it even reached his hands to be the shomer of it. So that would be the case when the Braisa is saying he's potter because he never became a shomer on it in the first place.
Okay, what if he just tell him to destroy it before we can do whatever you want with it?
So if he tells him that, that's a nice. If he says I'm a nas lifter, then he's potter. If he says I'm a nas lifter, we're talking about if he didn't tell him I'm a nas lifter. Well, so now, sort of, Huna is drawing the distinction. Did the Shomer actually receive the Kaili yet and become a Shomer on it, and then he ripped it, then he would still be Chayim because the guy didn't tell him I'm a nas lifter. But if he never became a Shomer on it yet, then he would actually be, then he would be Potter.
But he's giving it to him, doesn't mean that he's a Shomer.
Yeah, so that's because, yeah. So Tosfos discusses, in other words, that we mean, it can mean even that he told him, I'm going to give it to you, you take it into your possession, and then you rip it, but he only told him that after the object came to his hand. That means he wanted him to begin with to watch it. When he says rip it, he doesn't mean you can't. He would mean if you want to rip it, he's saying, in other words, basically, don't think. I know you're thinking you're going to be nervous that you have to be a shomer and you have to watch it completely. If you rip it, I don't mind. But he didn't actually say that you will be potter if you rip it. So that would be the case. Rav Huna is drawing a distinction. Then he would be chayev. Whereas if he gave it to him and told him you rip it, then he would be potter. However, Omale Rabba, but Rabba says, what do you mean? Lishmer to Osir Yodim Mashma. What do you mean? The word Lishmer, which is what the Braisa is doubting from, implies that it already came to his hand, that he already became a Shomer on it. And still the Braisa is saying that he'd be Potter for ripping. Elo, Omale Rabba, Hoba Hoda Osir Yodim. Rather, Rabba says, in both cases, we're talking it came into his hands. Volokasha, Hoda Osir Yodim, Teras Shmira, Hoda Osir Yodim, Teras Kriya. How did the guy give it to him? Did he tell him, I want you to be a shomer on it? Later on, he tells him, you can whip it. So unless he tells him, I'm a nas lifter, then he's going to be chayim. Whereas if he gave it to him to begin with and told him that you can whip it if you want, that would be his potter. So in other words, now we're saying the distinction is not, as Rav Huna is saying, whether it actually reached his hands or not, but what did he tell him to begin with when he gave it to him? Did he tell him, I want you to watch it? And later on, he changed his mind. And told him, you can rip it if you want, but he didn't say I'm a nas lifter, therefore he remains chayev because he was already a shomer. The other case is talking about here also became a shomer on it, but he, to begin with, the guy told him, you're a shomer, but you can rip it if you want, and therefore we're saying that he would be, potter, because to begin with, he gave it to him with that understanding. So in other words, the difference is, the Braise is saying, because the posit says lishmer implies that it's to give it to him for the sake of guarding. So the Gemara gives an example, since we mentioned in this Braise an example where he has to give it out to the Aniyim. So the Gemara tells, Hahu arnika de tzedakah, it happened once there was a purse full of money for tzedakah, de osi le pumbedissa, which came to pumbedissa, asked, now Rabbi Yosef was the gabbai tzedakah over there in pumbedissa. After the Rabbi Yosef Gabi Ahu Gabra, Rabbi Yosef gave it as a pikodin to a certain person to watch until they get around to giving it to the Aniyim. Poshaba, the guy was Peshaya, and he didn't watch it properly. Also Ganvi Ganvua, and Ganovim came and stole the money. Chayve Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef told him Yochayev. Actually, the Shittim Kubetzis points out, Rabbi Yosef himself couldn't sit on a base din that would pass him for that. First of all, Rabbi Yosef himself is the one who gave it to him for the Shmira, so therefore he's a Negeva Dover. Second of all, Rabbi Yosef because he's a Negeva Dover, because he's the one who gave it to him as a Shmira. Second of all, also, the fact is, elsewhere, the Gemara says that when a person says, I want to give money to the poor people of this city, a dayan in that city cannot sit on such a beis din because he's also negei b'davar, because the more tzedakah comes from this person to the poor people of the city, the less the other people in the city have to give tzedakah to them. So Rabbi Yosef, in two ways, is a negei b'davar. What it means is, in other words, he told him, you're going to be chayav. The case is actually going to have to be judged by a beis din that doesn't include me and doesn't include anybody from Medisa, but you should know they're going to find that you're chayav because you're a shomer and you're pesher. Omele Abaye Bartanya Lishmer Velechalakaniyim. What about the Braisa we just said that only if he's doing it in order to guard it, only if he was given it to guard it, not to give it out to the poor? So why are you being chayav him? Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, the difference is, Aniyat the Pumbedissa, Mekatz Kayetz Lahu. Because the difference is, when it comes to the poor people of Pumbedissa, there's fixed amounts that are given to every person. Every person, there's a known amount that the Gaborit Tzedakah could give him, so therefore, in that sense, that money can already be considered to be in his reshus, and therefore, Velishmarhu, therefore, it can be considered that each one of them, individually, he is actually watching it individually on behalf of each particular oni. In other words, you could say that they already own this money in a certain sense. Each one of them owns a certain amount of this money, and therefore that would be considered lishma. So therefore he would in fact be chayev, even though it's v'chalak aniyim. Only when you have. So the difference is, in other words, if the money was in general, it's going to be for the, if it's in general, it's going to be for tzedakah, but not specifically for the aniyim of this place or whatever, then he would be potter, like the Braisa said, but here where it's actually, so Rashi explains what we mean is it's actually, they have fixed amounts per person. The Rambam actually explains it differently. It would rather be that it's talking about here, it's fixed for the poor people of the city. In other words, you could have where Reuven gives Shimon money to watch, and he tells him, in general, at some point, I want you to give this out to Aniyim, but not the Aniyim, not necessarily the Aniyim of this particular city, just whatever Aniyim you want. So then, any Aniyim, they could tell them, I mean other Aniyim, but here, where it's for the ones in the city, so Rashi, again, is saying, we're talking about a specific amount per person. That has to be earmarked per person, according to the Rambam. That's not necessary, it's enough that it's earmarked for the poor people of this city collectively.
Yeah. Here's one worst
Pumbedissa. What is a city in Babel? It's a famous city in Babel where there was a big Yeshiva. Hadron al-Hachoy. Okay. The last two prakim of our Masechta are going to deal with matters of Gneva and Gzela. We talked about that in the seventh parak a lot. We had the din mostly be focused on the dinim of Hashlom al-Bab Chamisha. Now we're going to talk about other dinim that involve a Ganav and a Gaza. Okay. Now, one thing is, we learned back there in the seventh parak, we had a long sugya on the subject. We had a long sugya on the subject of shinui. What kind of shinui in the object is koine it for the gazlan or the ganav? We said there are certain kinds of things where if something changes, the nature of the thing changes. Then we said that now the ganav himself now owns the object, and now he's koine it, and now he doesn't have to pay back the thing itself, just the value.
Right.
Just the value of it. So now, the beginning of our parak is going to talk about those dinim in detail. So the Mishnah says, "Hagozel etzim va'asan kalim." If a person stole wood and made it into kalim, and what kind of kalim? We'll see in the Gemara. But or semer va'asan begadim, or he stole wool and made it into clothing. So then Meshalim, Peshatagzela, then he has to pay the value of them as they were when he stole them, because, again, he was koina them b'shinui, he doesn't have to return the actual wood or the actual wool because he was koina them with that shinui. Wait. So, continues the Mishnah. Goza porom uberes v'yolda. What if he stole a pregnant cow and it gave birth by him, or tsemer to, or rochel to unav goza, or he stole a sheep that was covered with wool, and then the ganav himself sheared the sheep. Then meshalim may parah ha imedes leled, or may rochel ha imedes v'gozes. Then he pays the value of a cow that is about to give birth, or the value of a sheep that's about to be shorn. Meaning, in other words, Rashi to be sheared, that they shear off the wall. Rashi explains, in other words, that the fact is the baby is now worth more. So, in other words, let's say you could have, let's say the cow.
Listen.
Let's say, for example, the cow when it was pregnant with the baby is worth, let's say, 120. Now the baby is born, the mother is worth 100 and the baby is worth 50. Rashi learns what it means is, in other words, the baby he's acquired with a shinui, because before the baby was an unborn baby and now it's a born one, and therefore that's a shinui. The mother, Rashi learns, is not a shinui. There hasn't been a shinui in the mother. There was a mother animal before and it's a mother animal now. Therefore, Rashi learns, and the same thing with the wool, for example. The animal is still the animal. The wool has changed. Therefore, Rashi learns that when the Mishnah is saying, Meshalim's made para ha'imedes leilud, made rochel ha'imedes v'gozes, what it means is, in other words, the actual para or the actual rochel he's going to have to return. Right. The wool, as far as the wool or the baby, we figure out how much were they worth before it was born or before it was shorn. The difference between that is the difference between that he gets to keep. So in other words, in our example, we would say, let's say again, the pregnant animal was worth 120. Now the mother plus baby is worth 150. Mm-hmm. What we're going to say is, in Rashi, according to Rashi, the vote would be, therefore, the animal itself, he has to return. Now the remaining 20 to 50, what we say is, he has to pay back $20 to the other guy, which was the value of the baby before it was born. He himself is coin of the baby, and therefore he can keep that along with the extra value that the baby has after it's born. That's how Rashi learns what the Mishnah means.
If the guy wanted the actual animal.
If he wanted an actual animal, you can ask. If a Ganav wants to give it to him, but he's not required to up the Allah. Up the Allah because he was coin. Yeah. When we say Dmei Paraha in Medes Leilad, we're saying the value of a cow that's about to give birth. Tosfos points out, what about, for example, consider, let's say, so he stole the animal when it still had a month left to go until it gave birth. So now, what happens to the increase in value of the mother animal during that month?
How do you have to steal an animal?
You mean, how would a person be able to steal an animal? A person would steal an animal. Come on, no. Let's come on.
He's
going to carry it. He carries it. He yells it and makes it go. He opens the door and then hits it with a stick. Whatever. Come on. No. Okay. No. Listen. Tosfos understands a little further. The Tosfos is printed on Tzadik Hei Amud Aleph. That what would happen is, now you have two different Girsois within Tosfos there, what they say. The Girsa we have in front of us in Tosfos says that the increase in value will go to the Gazlan. Meaning, in other words, let's say. So this animal, let's say, for example, we're talking about a cow. A cow's pregnancy is the same as a human being's pregnancy in length, 9 months. So let's say, for example, he stole the cow when it was 6 months pregnant, let's say. At that point with the unborn baby, let's say it's worth 110. By the time it comes to the animal giving birth, now it's worth 120. And then again, once it gives birth, then the mother and baby together will be worth, let's say, 150. Tosfos, the way we have it printed in front of us, says that extra money will go to the Gazlan. In other words, Tosfos learns the animal itself, the mother animal itself, he's returning, because again, there was no shinui in that. The fact that it was worth 110 at the time, that extra $10 now.
Then,
110 it was worth when he stole it. 120 by the time it's ready to give birth. So Tosfos learns that 10 of those dollars he has to pay back the owner, and the other $10 he gets to keep. Because that shvach happened by him. On the other hand, Hagoyis Hagura brings over there a different girsa in Tosfos that says Lanigzel, that extra amount would belong to the one he stole it from, which means if we learn that way, it would mean that the extra $20 he's paying for the other guy, who he stole from, he's giving back the actual animal, and he's in addition paying $20 for the total value of what it increased in value before the shinui happened, meaning before the birth took place, where it increased from 110 to 120. That's all the point now. With that said, both of these points, what we're saying that Rashi says over here, that he doesn't have to, what Rashi is saying over here, that there's no shinui to the mother animal itself, only the shinui is only in the baby or in the wool, and also what Tosfos is saying about the change in value between when he stole it and when it gave birth, the Rosh disagrees on both those points. As far as the first point, he says there's considered to be a shinui in the actual mother herself. Therefore, in the scenario that we're saying, let's say again, when he stole the animal right before it gave birth, it was worth 120, right, but then it gives birth and it's worth 150, the Rosh would, again, Rashi had said, we'd say, he has to give back the mother animal, which is worth 100, right, the baby, which is worth 50, he gets to keep, and he pays 20 to the owner for the fact that the mother animal, when she was pregnant with the baby, was worth 120. The Rosh, on the other hand, would learn the entire 150 he pays, and he can keep both the mother animal and the baby. The Rosh would learn he was coined both of them with shinui. Sure. As far as the question of if he sold it earlier in the pregnancy, and then it gained value during the pregnancy, then the Rosh holds, like the first girsa in Tosfos over there, that says that extra amount would go to the Gazlan, whereas according to this girsa of the Vilna Gaon in Tosfos, then it would actually go so the Rosh would hold that extra amount, the fact that it increased in value during that time, would go to the Gazlan, whereas again the Gra learns that Tosfos disagrees. Okay. The Mishnah continues, Gozal part of an Isabra Etzloi, how about another case, if he stole a cow and it became pregnant by him. So far again, before we were talking about he stole a cow that was already pregnant. Here we're talking about when he stole it, it wasn't yet pregnant, and now it became pregnant by him. The Yolda, and then it gave birth. Or Rochel, or he stole a sheep, the Nitana Etzloi, and it developed wool, the wool grew on it by him, the Gozza, and later on he sheared it. Then the Shalom, the Shas Egzela, then he pays according to the time of Egzela, meaning the extra amount, the fact that the wool or the baby or whatever is worth extra, that he gets to keep. Because again, we go, Zerach Klal, the general rule, Kala Gazlonim, Shalman, Kashas Egzela, a Gazlon pays according to how much it was worth at the time of the Egzela, which we'll see in the Gemara, all the details about that. So the Gemara starts off. Amri. So now, the Bnei HaYeshiva said, you look at the Mishnah, it sounds like Eitzim Va'asan Kalim Ein, only if he stole wood and made it into kalim, then we would say he's coining them with shinui. Shifan loy, but if he just planed them, if he just stole rough boards and he planed them or sanded them or whatever to smooth them, then that would not be considered a shinui. Similarly, Tsemer v'Asan begodim, the Mishnah is mentioning where he stole wool and made it into clothing, ain, then that would be considered a shinui, but libnon loy, but apparently not if he just bleached them. So now, the question is, Urmini, if we understand like that, then we have a contradiction from a Braisa. Because a Braisa says, Gozal Eitzim V'Shifon. A Braisa says that if he stole wood and planed it, or Avonim V'Sitason, or he stole stones and he carved them, or whatever, he shaped them. Semer V'Libnon, or he stole wool and bleached it. Pishdon V'Nikohu, or he stole flax and he cleaned it. So in all those cases, Meshalem Keshas Egzela. In all those cases, he pays the value of it as it was at the time when he stole it, meaning, in other words, that he's not giving back the actual object because he was coining it. So the Mishnah is saying only if he made it into Kalim. The Braisa is saying even if he didn't. Amar Abaya, so the answer is like this. Abaya says, Tane di dan katoni shinu de rabbonon de habra. We have to consider like this. There is such a thing as a shinu de Raisa, and then there's a shinu de rabbon. Namely, we learned back in the seventh parak when we talked about these dinim of shinui, we brought sources in Psukim for this concept that a Gazlan is Kohen B'Shinui. But Midaraisa, it needs to be an irrevocable Shinui. It needs to be a Shinui that's never going to go back to the way it was. Then you have, we're going to talk about on Daf Tzadik Dalet, we're going to talk tomorrow about Hashem, that the Chachamim made a takana in certain cases, even when on the Raisa levels you wouldn't have been koine, the Chachamim want to make it easier for a Gazlan to do tshuva, if there can be cases where he figures, if I have to return the actual object itself, then I may as well not bother, and then he's never going to do tshuva. The Chachamim want to make it easier for him to do tshuva, so there are certain things which would not be considered a shinu d'Raisa, only the Rabbanon, but nevertheless the Mishnah is talking about those as well, says Abaye. So Tani Gun, Katani shinu d'Rabbanon d'Hadra, the Tana of our Mishnah is talking about the kind of shinu which is only drabbanon, which could be undone for choshekin shinu daraisa, and how much more so where it's a shinu that would be daraisa, which cannot be undone. Meaning, in other words, let's taich out what we mean by that. So eitz and vasan kalim. So Abaye says, consider when you're talking about he stole wood and made it into kalim, we mean the eitz and mishupin. He stole wood that was already planed. It's already smoothed out and ready to be made into kalim. Umayin hu nisarin. So therefore, he stole ready finished boards. The shinri dehodr the bar yosahu. Now, when he stole them and made them into kalim, for example, into a table or a chair or a box or whatever, fine. It's still a shinri achozer the bar yosahu. It could go back to the original state. Di bari mashlef lehu. All he has to do is take the box or the chair or whatever apart, and they're back to being wooden boards. So that would only be a shinui that is drabon. So nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us that such a thing, he acquires it, he's koine it in the Mishal Shasagzela. Similarly, Semer Vasan Begodim, when the Mishnah mentions that he stole wool and made it into clothing, we mean but Semer Tavui, we mean the wool was already spun, and again, the Shinui Dehodu Lebriyasu, it's a Shinui Achoz Lebriyasu, Diboy Sosale, he makes it into clothing, all he has to do is pull apart the clothing, and the wool is just as it was before, it goes back into being in the form of spun threads. So therefore, the Mishnah, he's talking about such things. Even then, he's koine. V'choshken shinu daraisa. How much more so a shinu, which is daraisa? For sure, he would be koine with that. So that's what the Mishnah. Tana bara. On the other hand, the Tana of the Braisa, the Tana bara shinu daraisa katoni. V'shinu d'rabbanon like katoni. The Tana of the Braisa wants to focus only on shinu daraisa, not d'rabbanon. Therefore, the Braisa is saying, for example, that if he took wood and planed it, it would be. Then we would say that he's a. Then we would say Mishalim Kshasa Zela. The Braisa did not want to address the case where he stole already plain boards and made them into a keli. It's true he would be coined at Midrabanon, but the Braisa wants to focus only on things Daraisa. If he steals wood and planes it, that's a shinu she'ena chodzel b'riyasa. That would be a shinu Daraisa because you can never unplane the wood. You can never make it into rough boards again. Therefore, that's a shinu Daraisa.
When he can reverse it,
that's a shinu d'rabbanon.
And when he can't do it, it's d'rabbanon.
That's what we're saying. When he can't reverse it, it's d'rabbanon. So when he could reverse it, it's d'rabbanon. So going from rough boards to smooth boards is a shinu d'rabbanon because it's unchangeable. It's irrevocable. Going from smooth boards to kalim is reversible because you can take apart the kalim and get back the original planed boards.
Why can't the wall just patch it up from the wood? And make it a little tougher. You could just throw it on the ground.
No, because that's not going to still have to make it. It's not going to be exactly. The Gemara later on in the Perek is going to call such a thing ponim kadoshes bo lakan. It's considered like a new thing. It's not. It's still not there.
Even when Rabbanon, you say you could change it, it's still not going to be exactly how it was before.
Well, it's going to be close enough. Close enough. It'll be basically the same thing. So Tosfos compares this with, we had a din that Rabba had said back in the 7th Perek, who said that even Shinui Achoz L'Briyasi is a changed Daraisa, so how would he explain the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa? And Tosfos explains that he would say the Mishnah is saying a Chidush, that even the wood was already planed and he made it into Kalim, even though it's a Shinui Achoz L'Briyasi, nevertheless it's still a Shinui. And the Braisa would be saying in general that a Shinui is a Shinui, even though it's not considered a Kalim, even though, for example, it's not a Kalim. Yeah, he only planed them and made them into smooth boards. Nevertheless, the Braisa would be saying that's enough for Shinui. So Rabba would understand things that way. Okay. So that's Abaye's explanation. Rav Ashi gives a different explanation how to reconcile the Mishnah and the Braisa. Tana didan nami shinu daraisa katani. No, the Tana of our Mishnah is also focusing on a shinui that's daraisa, an irrevocable shinui. Because what we mean, eitzim va'ason kalim, when the Mishnah is talking about wood that he turned into Kalim, not like we were saying before, for example, that he takes the wood and makes it into a box, but rather Buchoni. For example, he took the wood and made it into Buchoni, which is a he made it into a mortar that you use to Rashi explains Buchoni Lichtosh. In other words, you have like this. When you want to grind up spices, for example, by Pitamach Todos, we're talking about you have a machteshes, right? You have a mortar that you grind the spices in. You need a heavy piece of wood to pound on them, and that's how you grind them. So now we're saying that he took the wood and he made it into a buchoni, into that thing, that's into that piece of wood that's used to pound on the spices, where there's dahainu shifon. That is exactly what the Braise is describing as smoothing it. He didn't actually reshape it or anything. Right. All he did was he smoothed it. So therefore, so the Mishnah and the Braise are saying the same thing, just in different words, says Rav Ashi.
There's no really difference between him changing the actual, the same thing when he's changing.
Rav Ashi is saying that both of them are focusing on a shinui d'oraisa. It has to be an irrevocable change. But when we say Kalim in our Mishnah, we don't mean, for example, that he makes it into a box or a chair, where that would be a shinui achoz l'briyase. Rather, the Mishnah is talking about a shinui she'en achoz l'briyase, which is a shinui d'oraisa, namely that he turned this piece of wood into a buchoni, into something that you can use to pound on spices or grain or whatever in a mortar with. The point is, there has been a change there. He smoothed it, and it can never be unsmoothed again, like you said.
Right.
So therefore, that's considered a shinui she'en achoz l'briyase. Similarly, semer v'ason begadim, when we talk about wool that he turned into clothing, would be, for example, namti. He made it into felt. Dehainu shinui d'lehadir. In both cases, this is an irrevocable shinui, because even you take apart a piece of felt, like what a hat is made out of, it never goes back to being like the original fibers that it was. Therefore, it's a shinui she'enu chozel b'yose. Therefore, it's a shinui d'araita. That's what we're saying. So therefore, someone else, Rashi is saying, don't say like a buyer, that there's a difference between two different types of shinui, and the Mishnah is talking about one, and the Braise is talking about the other. Both of them are talking about a shinui d'oraisa, but they're saying the same thing in other words. The Mishnah is talking about where he's making it into kalim, namely where it doesn't actually require nailing them together or whatever. He just smoothed it, but that's a shinui she'en achoz l'briyase. And the Braise is talking about where he took the wool and turned it into felt, which again is an irrevocable shinui.
That's how we go.
So that would be another way of explaining the difference between the Mishnah and the Braise. And Tosfos points out, you do have to have, it does require that doing this change would also change the name of it. When he makes it into a Bochoni, not only is he planing it, he's also changing it into a new name. It's now called a Bochoni. Tosfos points out, if it didn't change the name, then that would not be considered enough of a shin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the Gemara says, again, Rasa Namti, Dahana Shinu, Loi Hodu, either way it's a Shinu that doesn't go back. The Gemara asks the Libun Mihavi Shinui. Now in the Braisa though, we're saying that bleaching the wool is considered a Shinui. Is it really? Or a mini? I have another contradiction. A Braisa is talking about the mitzvah of Reshes Hagez, where you have the mitzvah that you have to take some of the wool that you sheared from your sheep every year and give it to the Kohen. Now, the din is, you're only chayev to give it to the Kohen as long as it's still in its original form. So, Bryce says, lo hispik litnei lo adjet savoy, if before he had a chance to give it to the Kohen, he dyed the wool, then he's potter from giving that wool to the Kohen, because now it's already considered changed.
Wait,
no, because you can't.
Why not dye the
same color? No, because, it's a new color already. Libnei v'lo tzavoy chayev, but if he bleached it and did not dye it, then he would still be chayev to give, because the bleaching is not considered enough of a change for it to be a shinui for him to have been koineh. Therefore, he still owns the wool itself is still something that he has to give to the koin. So we see that bleaching is not enough of a shinui. Amar Abaya, Loi Kasha, Horeb Shimon, Horabanan. There's a difference between Reb Shimon and the Chachamim. They have a machlokes on this. The Tanya, Gozezoi, because one, a Braisa says, if a person sheared the sheep, Togoi v'Orgoi, and then he spun the wool, and then he wove it into clothing, or Tosfos says, to be exact, it wouldn't actually have to be that he wove it, it would be enough if he made it into, like, braids. Anyway, so then, Ein Mitzdarif. So then it doesn't combine together. Combine together in the sense that Rashi explains, the Mishnah in Kulin tells us, when is a person chayiv in Reishas Hageiz? Only when he has a certain minimum number of sheep. He has to have a minimum of 5 sheep, where each of them produces a certain minimum amount of wool, and the aggregate amount between all of them is a certain amount. So now, what wool combines together to make that chiyuv is only wool that has not been changed yet. So now we're saying, therefore, so the Brice is saying that if he, that even though he, that the, that, that once he spun it and wove it, it doesn't combine, but libnoi, but if he only bleached it, Reb Shimon and Mitzdarif, Acham and Mitzdarif. Reb Shimon says it doesn't combine because the bleaching is already considered a shinui, and the Chacham say it does because the bleaching, according to them, is not considered enough of a shinui. Well, very well then. When the Braisa said that once he bleached the wool, then the Ganev is koineh, that would be according to Reb Shimon. When we're saying, on the other hand, that when it comes to Reishas Hageiz, it's not considered that he's koineh, that would be according to the Chachamim. Rava Amahava Har Reb Shimon. Rava says you don't have to say that. You could say both of them are according to Reb Shimon. V'loitasha had the napse naputzi had the sarke saruki. It depends. What did he do with the wool before he spun it? Did he just, was it not saying that putzi, that he only combed it by hand? That's not considered much of a shinu. Whereas sarke, saruki, would mean that he actually combed it. Using a comb, that's considered a bigger shinu. So therefore, so even within Reb Shimon would say that that bleaching it, what do you do before you bleach it, you comb it. To get all the fibers to run in a straight line, if he only combed it by hand and then he bleached it, Reb Shimon wouldn't consider that to be enough of a shinui. But if he combed it with a comb, then already Reb Shimon would consider that and the bleaching is already considered enough of a shinui, and therefore he would be potter, and therefore he'd be potter from Reishas Hageiz. So there's two possibilities. Tosfos points out earlier in Masechta, where we also had this point, there's two possibilities. If he has enough other wool to be chayiv in Reishas Hageiz, then he's chayiv with the other wool. This particular wool is not going to be part of the Reishas Hageiz anymore, but he'll take other wool and give that to the Kohen. If the result of that is now he doesn't have enough unchanged wool, that's the shear that we say over there, mono pras, a mono and a half's worth of wool, then a weight of wool, then he would be potter completely. Okay. So that's Rava is saying that both of them are according to Reb Shimon. Rav Chiya ba'Oven gives yet another answer. Also, that could be that both of them are according to Reb Shimon. You could say one is where he just bleached it the normal way. The other one is where that's chavre chavuri means he made it white. The other one is the kabre kaburi means that he used sulfur to bleach it, which bleaches it much more. That's a much more powerful kind of bleaching. So that would be the kind of thing. So in that case, Tosfos points out that kind of distinction, both the Chachamim and Reb Shimon would agree there could be a distinction between them. Chavre Chavuri, even Reb Shimon would not consider just regular bleaching to be enough of a shinui. Chavre Chavuri, but if he uses sulfur on it, then even the Chachamim would consider that a shinui. Now, Rava, Tosfos says, did not want to say that because he figures when you're using sulfur on it already, that amounts to dyeing. If that's already changing the color completely, so that amounts to dyeing. Rav Chiya Oven considers it a type of bleach.
Exactly. One thing, if it's a regular bleaching, you cannot just change it back.
You can't change it back.
You can't put it in the sun. It's not that.
So, and then Tosfos points out that in Rava's statement we mention about the different kinds of combing because the usual thing is you usually do one after the other. You comb it by hand and then you comb it with a comb and you do things in these orders. So therefore Tosfos says that that's why Rava was focusing on the different kinds of combing, whereas Reb Chiya Ba'Oven is focusing on the different types of bleaching. And Rava, meanwhile, would say that the bleaching with sulfur is already not considered bleaching anymore. That already is considered sebeah. So that would be the difference. Okay. The Gemara asks, though, still, Hashta yesh loimat sovel of Shimon lehavishinui. However, though, we have to ask if according to Reb Shimon, even dyeing the wool is not considered a shinui, libun havishinui. You're going to tell me according to Reb Shimon, there's some kind of bleaching that is considered a shinui. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, gozas rishin utzvoi. If as he started shearing the wool every time he dyed the wool that he sheared, or rishin utzvoi, each one as he as he sheared it off the sheet, he spun it, or Rishon Rishon Va'orgo, each time he wove it, or as Tosfos says, he made it into braids or whatever, a mitzvah, then that doesn't count towards the shear of the minimum amount of wool that you have to have in order to be chayav. Again, you have to have 5 sheep, each of which produces a certain amount of wool, and the aggregate between them has to be a certain minimum amount, a mona and a half's weight of wool. So now you have, in other words, each time he sheared 1 sheep, and then he immediately took the wool and did one of these things to it, it doesn't count towards the total. If eventually after that he has 5 more sheep where he shears and he doesn't do that, and between the, all of them they have mono pras, then he'll be chayav. But otherwise he'll be potter because what he already bleached or dyed or wove or whatever doesn't count. Or that's, it didn't mention bleaching yet, but wait, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, Omer Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon, Tzavay Mitzarev, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rav Shimon, if he dyed the original wool, then it does combine together to make the shear of Reshef Hagez. So we see that according to Rav Shimon, even dyeing is not considered a shinui for that purpose. Certainly bleaching shouldn't be considered a shinui. A shinui that he should then, we should then say it's not part of the gaze anymore, it's not part of the wool to be chayiv in Reshef Hagez. Amar Abaya, like Kasha, Horabbanon alibedir of Shimon, Vaharab Shimon ben Yehuda alibedir of Shimon. You could answer the Udi of Brisa that said, that mentioned some type of bleaching, which according to Rav Shimon would be considered a shinui. That would be the Chachamim's understanding of Rav Shimon. Now we have the second Brisa is Rav Shimon ben Yehuda's understanding of Rav Shimon. So they disagree what Rav Shimon said. Rava, Amar Rava says a different answer. La'olam like Pligia Rabbanon alibedir of Shimon ben Yehuda. In fact, the other Chachamim do not disagree with Rav Shimon ben Yehuda. They agree that Rav Shimon said that dying is not considered a shinui. Aye, then why would he consider bleaching a shinui? Dying should be considered much more of a shinui. The reason is, dying on the face of it is more of a permanent change. The shiny tseva, the difference is dying is a shinui achoz lebriyasi. Hoyo v'yocho lahavira ayde tsapon, because he could remove the dye using tsapon, which is, it's related to the word soap in English. Rashi, in fact, translates it with the word shayon or shavon, whatever, which is the French word for soap. So in other words, there's a kind of strong soap or strong detergent or whatever. The dyes they had in those days generally were not color fast. Right. Nowadays, you have dyes that are permanent. Exactly that. In those times, there were strong detergents that now, the same, nowadays you also have certain kinds of dyes that will come out in the wash. So in those times, they had many more dyes that were like that, that were impermanent, and if you wash them with a strong enough soap or detergent, then they would come out. Therefore, Rava is saying, dyeing the wool is not considered a shame after it's
the
problem. Yeah, that's dying means changing the color. V'chi katoni hosam lohispik litnalach at Tzavei Potter. Aye, what about we had before Braisa that said that if before he gave it to the Kohen he dyed it, then we said it's Potter, well, Kimna Kadivra Hakol. And we said we wanted to say that's according to everybody. The difference is the Kola Ilan. The difference is there you're talking about he used the dye, Kola Ilan, Deloy Ovar, that does not disappear. Even Sapon does not have the ability to remove that. So there's a difference, Rava is saying, between. So there's a difference between different kinds of dyeing. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, in the name of Rav Shimon, is going to say, and the other Chachamim agree that this is what Rav Shimon holds, is that dyeing wool is not considered a shinui, is not considered a permanent shinui, because you could wash it with saffron, with detergent, and remove the dye. Whereas unless the dye was kola ilon, where then even saffron won't remove it, so that would be a shinui achoz, that would be a shinui she'en achoz l'briyasa, that would be an irrevocable shinui, and therefore Rav Shimon would agree that that part is it from Reishis Hagez, which in that case Tosfos says. So then we could have, instead of drawing a distinction between bleaching and dyeing, we could have made the distinction with the dyeing itself. It was better. The Braisa preferred to draw a distinction between kola ilan and bleaching. Neither one goes. Both of them are permanent changes. Once the wool is bleached, you can never unbleach it. Once you dye it with kola ilan, you can never undye it. And still, Rava would understand. Rav Shimon could be saying that. That libun is more of a permanent change, more than seva. Whereas the chachamim would say that dying is a so. Rava would say Rav Shimon understands and says that bleaching is more of a permanent change, and the chachamim would say that dying is a more permanent change because it's a bigger change, it's a bigger visible change to the wool. So in other words, so that would be why we made that distinction, even though the Gemara could have just as well, even though the Braisa could have just as well made a distinction within dying itself, instead it didn't, and left it up to now Robert to give that answer that there's a difference between different kinds of dyes.
But I'm thinking, Carl, if someone could always dye the animal, the wool, and not build, or not have to go to the kohen when the giant dwindles.
He could do that, but then he'd be missing out on a mitzvah. So we hope that he doesn't do that. But if he does, then yes, he would in fact be potter from the mitzvah. Anyway, the point is that we're so far what we're saying is
this one doesn't think he's going to die.
Well, nowadays, then okay. No, the mitzvah of Yeshua Gaze applies nowadays as well, but it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Anyway,
everyone
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. Whatever. The point is, in other words, so far what we've established is that there's a difference between shinui achozel lebriyasa and shinui shein achozel lebriyasa. There's a difference between a permanent, irrevocable change and not. So we're saying either in our Mishnah we're talking about a revocable change, and nevertheless, midrabanan he's able to keep that. Or we're saying, Rav Ashi was saying, our Mishnah was only talking about an irrevocable change, and our Mishnah was not focusing yet on the ones midrabanan. And then we're saying, as far as bleaching, you have the different opinions of the Chachamim versus Rav Shimon, and within that, you have the different opinions of Rava and Rav Priya Ba'avin, what kind of bleaching exactly would be considered a shinu shein achozel b'riyasei versus what kind is a shinu achozel b'riyasei. And we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and talk about this point of the various kinds of shinuyim, and continue with dealing with the relevant dealing about that.
Yeah, how exactly, like,